You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe. We're following up on our Uri Geller saga. When we left off the wee lad with the exotic accent, he was living high on the world, having failed miserably on Johnny Carson and stumbled upon all talk shows actually wanted him still and succeeding very well at the SRI studies. So Chelsea, this is where the episode picks up. He's sitting high on life. Project Stargate's looking at him because he did quite well at the SRI studies.
Pretty good, I think.
And they said, hey, Ray Hyman, you need to come look at this guy. Right off the bat, there are a lot of critics of Hal Puthoff and why do I always forget the other guy's name? Russell Targ.
Billy Meyer.
Billy Meyer study. Because they were too many fake UFOs.
Billy Mays. I'm skeptical of their study too. I'm going to be honest.
Critics of this experiment included many people, but the first ones we're going to talk about are David Marks and Richard Kamen, who published a description how Geller could have cheated in the informal test of his so-called psychic powers. Their 1978 article in Nature and 1980 book The Psychology of the Psychic, they described how a normal explanation was possible for Geller's alleged psychic powers. Marks and Kamen found evidence that while at SRI, Geller was allowed to peek through a hole in the laboratory wall, separating him from the drawings he was being invited to reproduce.
What?
These drawings were placed on a wall opposite the people, which the investigators Targ and Puthoff had stuffed with cotton gauze. In addition to this error, the investigators had also allowed Geller access to a two-way intercom, enabling him to listen to the investigators' conversation during the time when they were choosing and or displaying the target drawings. These basic errors indicate the great importance of ensuring that psychologists, magicians, or other people with an in-depth knowledge of perception who are trained in methods for blocking sensory cues be present during the testing of psychics. Marks, after evaluating the experiments, wrote that none of Geller's paranormal claims have been demonstrated in scientifically controlled conditions, concluding that Geller has no psychic ability whatsoever. However, he did believe him to have a very clear, well-practiced magic act. Marks and Kamen tested Geller's ability to mentally repair watches and found that, quote, many supposedly broken watches had merely been stopped by gummy oil, and simply holding them in his hand would warm the oil enough to soften it and allow watches to return to ticking. Now to get to Ray Hyman. This is how Ray Hyman got involved in the skeptic movement, which is how he ends up being put in charge of this question of Uri Geller. It was by one person alone, Alice Cooper. James Randi, whose name came up earlier with Johnny Carson, we're going to talk about him later, was touring with Alice Cooper as part of a stage show, and Alice Cooper asked James Randi to invite Hyman to a show in order to ask his advice about the audience. While there, quote, Randi pulled me aside and said, we really ought to do something about this Uri Geller business. Let's form an organization called the SIR, the Sanity in Research. And in 1972, he joined with Martin Gardner, and they had their first meeting, and the three of them felt they had no administration experience. Quote, we just had good ideas, end quote. And were soon joined by Marcello Truzzi, who provided structure for the group. Truzzi involved Paul Kurtz, and then they formed the CSICOP in 1976. In an interview in 2009 with Derek Colandano for the Skepticality podcast, Hyman was asked his opinion of the modern skeptical movement. Sorry, Uri Geller's coming. I just want to set up Ray Hyman, because he is a cool guy.
I was almost going to say, do we need, like, what would we call it? Like, bad
anti-asshole episode?
Of the, yeah, anti-asshole, like, bad boys of the skeptic societies. I'm interested in his work. I think that'd be really cool. Not that I'm, like, pro-skeptic, because I love Fleets of Fancy.
The right skeptic, yeah.
Yeah.
Not one who wants to shit over everything. I want one who wants to see the real shit.
Yeah, like us. Like, I want to believe in Serpo, but I just don't because I'm familiar with Richard Doty. I still like it, but I'm not going to shoot down everything. Like, I do want to hear more about this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So anyhow, Hyman responded that skeptics need to have goals and a way to measure them. They need to become a resource for the public and focus on educating journalists and teachers. Quote, that way we will get more bang for our buck, end quote. On the current state of the skeptical movement, Hyman stated, quote, the media, unfortunately, has made it so we have many more believers, end quote. Less science teachers in the classrooms, major newspapers are firing their science writing staff, 24-hour news channels are trying to fill all that time and compete with Fox News. Quote, things aren't good. That was 2009. Back to where we were, Hyman was asked by DARPA to investigate Uri Geller, and then Hyman was intrigued by the story. And Chelsea, I think this story came up in the Edgar Mitchell story, where Uri Geller had been around NASA and he had taken a ring and he mentally manipulated so it was in an S shape.
I don't remember it.
Okay, that's fine. That's as much as we need to know. Basically, he had broken a ring, like, with his mind.
What a dick.
Hyman had heard this story and he's like, I need to look into it. Uri Geller had set it on a table and without touching it, the ring stood on end, broke in half, and formed itself into an S shape.
That's fucking bullshit.
Upon questioning all the scientists at the lab, Hyman discovered that no one had actually seen this happen.
Of course not.
But had heard stories from others that it had happened. Weird how these stories come up, Chelsea, about all these things happening around Uri Geller. But it's not attributed to him. It's people are talking about it.
Yeah, that's how people gossip. That's just like human nature. You ever play...
But I feel that's apt from how you finished off the end of the last episode, how people are saying these things.
Oh yeah, George Norrie saying that watches just stop. But yeah, true. The watches just stop working if you need a reminder. There's no way that happened to a ring. I've seen rings and they don't do that.
Hyman continued to question the scientists and discovered that no one had ever seen Geller bend anything without touching it. In fact, quote, Geller was allowed to take the object into the bathroom and then come back with the bent object. They took his word for it, end quote.
Okay, I do think he has powers.
If you give me 4 hours and a spoon and nobody around for accountability, yeah. I have powers too, damn it.
Like, how is that not powerful to be able to, like, have all this...
Manipulate people.
Yeah, this is insane.
Then, quote, the parapsychologist also sent to investigate saw a psychic, and I reported back that I saw a charismatic fraud, end quote. So Hyman reports back to the government that Geller was a complete fraud, and as a consequence, Targ and Putoff lost their government contract. The result is they go on a publicity tour, all of them, Geller, Targ, and Putoff, to seek private funding for further research work on Geller.
I love that. There's a happy ending to that.
And he doesn't actually get involved with Project Stargate. Like, that's where it gets cut off.
Did we know that? We did Project Stargate.
Yeah, I know.
I can't remember. We did it a while ago.
He doesn't actually end up getting involved with it. He's just one of those names that's really attached to it.
Maybe we knew that, but I'm glad that we're going over it more thoroughly now.
And in an encyclopedia of claims, frauds, and hoaxes of the occult and supernatural, James Randi writes, quote, Hal Putoff and Russell Targ, who studied Mr. Geller at the Stanford Research Institute, were aware, in one instance at least, that they were being shown a magician's trick by Geller. Their protocol for this serious investigation of the powers claimed by Geller were described by Ray Hyman as, quote, sloppy and inadequate, end quote. Sorry, continuing on, because that's a quote within a quote. Critics have pointed out that both Putoff and Targ were already believers in paranormal powers, and Geller was not adequately searched before the experiments. Psychologist C.E.M. Hansel and skeptic Paul Kurtz have noted that the experiments were poorly designed and open trickery.
This is amazing on so many levels. Do you think that Uri Geller could exist today?
Yes, he still does.
I mean, like, for him to have come to being during this day.
Yes. Because RFK Jr. exists.
That's true. Second point I have to make is I just pulled up this book because this book sounds fantastic. And wow.
Is there a picture of James Randi on there?
Wow, those eyebrows.
Oh, that's James Randi, isn't it? Oh,
they
yeah.
They are sure.
He is a wizard.
Yep, those are wizard eyebrows for sure.
Don't take that picture away because we're about to talk about James Randi now.
Good. I want to look at him in the eye like this.
James Randi begins his career as a magician under the stage name The Amazing Randi, and later chose to devote most of his time to investigating paranormal, occult, and supernatural claims.
He's like Houdini! They had the same start!
But during Alice Cooper's 1973 to 74 Billion Dollar Babies tour, Randi performed on stage as a mad dentist and as Alice Cooper's executioner. He also built several of the stage props, including the guillotine. And that's where everybody met each other, for the debunkers group.
This is such a good story.
Alice Cooper, on James Randi's death, had this quote, "I am so proud to say that for a brief time, the greatest of them all, the amazing Randi, was part of our traveling troupe. He was our illusion guru and taught me everything I know about how magic could meet rock and roll. His genius helped the Billion Dollar Babies show become the spectacle no one had ever seen. He was rock and roll's Gandalf," end quote.
I love this. It just keeps getting better. I want to read this book.
James Randi, out of everybody, is Geller's biggest opponent. He claims once that Geller was a fraud who took advantage of helpless people. This seemed to be true according to Ori's first autobiography, where he stated that sometimes he would dupe the audience to think that he knew their vehicle's plates when it was his manager who had earlier provided them to him. Randi even made a habit of performing Geller's so-called paranormal displays on stage to prove that they were all an illusion. Like, he would word for word redo a magic show just to show that this was not magic.
I fucking love this. This guy just like wants to see his downfall.
And this is hilarious. So Randi would actually get accused of having psychic powers to perform acts such as the spoon bending. And according to James Alcock, at a meeting where Randi was duplicating the performance of Uri Geller, a professor from the University of Buffalo shouted out that Randi was a fraud. Randi said, "Yes, indeed. I'm a trickster. I'm a cheat. I'm a charlatan. That's what I do for a living. Everything I've done here was for trickery." End quote. And the professor shouts back, quote, "That's not what I mean. You're a fraud because you're pretending to do these things through trickery. But you're actually using psychic powers and misleading us by not admitting it." End quote.
I love the heavy use of the word trickery.
A similar event involves Senator Claiborne Pell, a confirmed believer in psychic phenomenon, where Randi personally demonstrated to Pell that he could reveal by simple trickery a concealed drawing that had been secretly made by the senator. Pell refused to believe that it was a trick, saying, quote, "I think Randi may be a psychic and doesn't realize it." Randi consistently denied having any paranormal powers or abilities.
Wow.
And according to Higginbotham, this result caused Randi to realize that much more must be done to stop Geller and those like him. So in 1976, Randi approached Ray Hyman, a psychologist who had observed the tests of Geller's abilities at Stanford and thought them slipshod, and suggested that they create an organization to combat pseudoscience, which we talked about, the Committee for Scientific Investigations of Claims of Paranormal, CSICOP. And using donations and sales of their magazine, The Skeptical Inquirer, they and secular humanist philosopher Paul Kurtz took seats on the executive board, and they also included Isaac Asimov and Carl Sagan as members of the board. And Randi traveled the world on behalf of CSICOP, becoming its public face, according to Hyman, the face of the skeptical movement.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
I love James Randi. What a cool guy.
I know.
I really like him.
I feel like he deserves his own episode.
No kidding. Yeah.
It turns out it's an Uri Geller episode. And again, we have so many more people, like, you're not expecting to come up, but they are.
I love him.
And Chelsea, do you know who was working at SRI at the time of Uri Geller being there?
Yes.
You don't, so I should just tell you. It's Jacques Vallée.
Oh.
So weirdly enough, he's around and Uri Geller's there. Vallée does not endorse Geller's claims, but he did not dismiss them either. He instead treats Geller as a data point within a broader pattern of anomalous cognition. And Vallée notes, describe Geller as a complex subject whose performance were difficult to categorize. And he acknowledged that some of the SRI results were ambiguous and that the experimental conditions were not always ideal, but he also noted that certain sessions produced outcomes that were not easily explained by conventional means. Valet's interest in Geller was less about spoon bending itself and more about what Geller represented and the possible overlap between psychic phenomena and altered states of consciousness.
That was something. Are you making this whole thing up?
You would think. It's just going to keep getting weirder because Chelsea, we're going to talk about, he's on top of the world. He got onto all the talk shows. He had that SRI study that is absolutely destroyed. But what do you think he does from here? I'm going to stop you right there. He becomes a mineral dowser.
But why?
After the 70s, in the 80s, he shifts his work from the televised and towards private consulting, and he describes himself as a mineral dowser. He claims he's able to locate oil, gold, and other resources, including diamonds, in the ground. And according to his own account, he charges a standard fee of £1 million during this time.
What?
In 1986, an Australian skeptic reports that the mining company Xanax paid Geller $250,000 and granted him an option for 1,250,000 shares at 20 cents each. The contract was tied specifically to the identification of a potential diamond deposit, but the place he identified never finds a single fucking diamond.
And he still got paid.
I don't know if he got to take advantage of the stock option.
What the fuck?
But that's where he actually ends up making like all his money, apparently, because I can't find much about it, but he says it too, makes all his money in mineral dowsing during this time.
Good for him.
Is it? I mean, yeah, he's taking it from pretty terrible people, but it's, I don't know.
I don't know, but he seems doing pretty good for himself where this... Yeah. I don't know.
He says he performed this for many mining and oil companies over this time, and using what he described as remote sensing or map dowsing rather than traditional tools. He claims he can detect underground structures by holding a pendulum over geological maps or by focusing on areas mentally. None of these results are ever independently verified. Funny enough, you can, I don't know if it's on Amazon, but you can find like an Uri Geller mineral dowsing set that you can buy yourself.
Oh, I'm not even interested in
it. If you ever want to get into it. And during this time, he expands his consulting into other categories and into other sectors. He worked with Readings FC. Oh, fuck. Sorry. This is where he gets into sports. So he works with a football club called Reading. And he says, we're going to get positive energy into your group to avoid being sent down to the lower level. So he places crystals behind the goals at Exeter City before a critical match. That Reader FC ends up losing 5-1. He advises cyclist Bruce Beresford on mental preparation for speed record attempts. Geller occasionally offered assistance in criminal investigations. One of his cases, he predicts that a kidnapped woman would be found alive. She is never located.
What? How was he?
Despite the lack of confirmed success, Geller continues to work the services for corporations and private clients. He described controversy as beneficial to his career, maintains that skepticism increases his demand for his abilities.
So is it just the legend around him by this point? Like, how is this happening?
I don't know, because failing seems to help him. Legends shouldn't be helped by that.
I don't feel like I've heard a success of his.
I'm not even gonna let you guess what happens here in the year 2000.
Okay.
He sues Nintendo. Do you know why?
I remember this. I can't remember why.
There's a Pokemon that he thinks kind of looks like him.
Oh, yeah.
Named Kadabra. Because it's bending a spoon.
Yep, I remember this.
He says this was an unauthorized use of his name and spoon-bending persona, and he argues the character's design, which included a bent spoon and psychic abilities, damaged his reputation. Geller sought substantial damage and attempted to block the character's use in trading card and merchandise. And for 20 years, Kadabra is not allowed out in the trading card game.
What? He won?
No, the lawsuit's unsuccessful. Oh. But they voluntarily just stopped printing this card because they're like, who fucking cares?
But you know what? It is who cares because it probably just makes it more valuable because they stopped printing it.
That's probably what Nintendo thought. Like, if we can't print this, these things are worth so much.
Yeah.
I don't know why in 2020 he decided that, like, no, you can just print them. So he, like, that's the lawsuit's over in 2020. And this is the last thing we're going to talk about in this episode, Chelsea. In 2009, he buys an island off coast of Scotland. And by off the coast, I mean like 100 meters off the coast of Scotland. It's called the Isle of Lamb. It is uninhabited. It is 100 meters by 50 meters. And Chelsea, I want you to just Google Lamb Island and
what
tell me
what
you
that?
See.
That's a dock. Is that not a dock?
Lamb Island, Scotland. It does not even have a dock.
Oh, that's a shitty island.
Yeah, you can't live on it.
Is this... No, this is Isle of Ew.
Oh, here, I will share my screen, Chelsea.
There's a lot of sheep on Isle of Ew.
Lamb Island is located right here. So, yeah,
Google Maps.
Here's Edinburgh. Here's Glasgow. Here is the Isle of Lamb.
Okay, South Dog.
This one. This one here.
Oh.
This is the island he bought.
That's a real shitty island. How big
you
is
You can't
that?
Live on this
not
island.
Very big, no.
Nobody can live on this island. It's 100 meters long.
Nope. It's not that big. There's not even a tree.
He apparently has been to it, but like, I don't know how you could actually like even dock to do that.
What would you do on that island?
Oh man, Chelsea, I'm just gonna read this part and then I'm gonna read his story on his island, on his website. He buys in 2009 Lamb Island off the eastern coast of Scotland, and they say it's previously known for its witch trials.
Huh?
It can't be.
No.
You can't do witch trials on that island.
No, just looking at it, no way. Is this him saying that or is this actually documented?
This is off of Wikipedia, so probably him saying it. And apparently beaches that Robert Louis Stevenson is said to have described in his novel Treasure Island.
No,
and I realize
I'm
still sharing my screen, but like again, there's no beaches on this island.
No, I don't believe this. This is made up. Uri Geller's making it up.
Why would he do such a thing? Geller claims that buried on the island is Egyptian treasure brought there by Skoda, the mythological half-sister of Tutankhamun in Irish mythology 3,500 years ago, and he claims that he will find the treasure there through dowsing. Geller also claimed to have strengthened the mystical powers of the island by burying in a crystal orb once belonging to Albert Einstein. In 2022, Geller sought to declare Lamb as the Republic of Lamb, a micronation.
This is fucking made up.
Oh boy, has he done that. Like, so hard.
Okay, can I just read you the description on Google Maps?
Yeah, go ahead.
Uninhabited offshore island flanked by several smaller islands reachable by boat. There's reviews.
Oh yeah.
What's the one star? Now owned by Uri Geller, who wants to make it an independent country and part of the EU, lol. Well, buddy, it's part of the UK. Additionally, Sturgeon and her nasty party SNP followers would never let you take it from her clutches. That was nice. Oh, this guy has a 5-star review. Colin Jones says, had a mind-bending experience here, or maybe it was a spoon.
And yeah, like that's what he's been up to. There's a Uri Geller Museum, which he owns in Tel Aviv, which you can go visit. But like outside of that, those are all the things he's got going on. And in the next episode, we're going to talk about like all the people he's associated with and all the predictions he's making, because apparently he's also a psychic, which hasn't come up until this point.
I'm having troubles wrapping my head about around what the fuck is going on with this guy and why is he who he is.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm going to make more sense later on either, Chelsea.
I can absolutely understand how you're not going to bring any logic to this. You know what? This is pretty standard for stuff like this in this community. It seems like the legend is preceding him somehow, and with each fail, the legend becomes stronger and people become more enthralled with him, maybe. This is super crazy. He doesn't even seem to be putting out anything good.
No, I can't think of one thing that he's actually done where you'd say like, oh yeah, this contributed to the community or like moved anything forward, was even like something tangible to work with.
It's not like he's writing books or like doing anything other than just saying that he can bend spoons.
Well, I shouldn't say. I'm pretty sure during this time he is writing books as well, but
okay,
nothing important.
No, it doesn't seem like it. So weird. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it.
Because, yeah, on his website itself, he has a page called Books. I can't tell if he's written these books or they're books about him, but there's a ton of books in there.
Or books he recommends, maybe.
Could be. But yeah, it's hard to say. That's enough for this episode. I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.